Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's been 7 days and it's been a seven busy days of news. And as ever, we always start the programme with news. And I never talk to myself, do I? I always have somebody in the know, and that someone in the know is always Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, how are you? I'm not sure if I'm in the know, but I'm here anyway.
Well, you're there, which, to be honest with you, is always a bit of a relief, because in days gone by, let's be honest with you, that was always a little bit of a lottery, I think has to be said. So the fact that you're there, you would have no idea. It's like a laugh. It's like a life raft in a sea of confusion. But still, there you go. Speaking of life rafts in the sea of confusion, one thing that is no longer confused, I think it's fair to say, is the future of Chris Meek.
Yep, so we've heard today that Chris is going to stay with Citroën. I think the final announcement of the exact deal is still to come out, but a three-year deal with Citroën. He's going to do at least a number of World Championship rallies next year. We think starting with Monte Carlo. It looks like it may be most of the European rounds, if not all of the European rounds. So great that he's in the car next year, and then he has 2 years with the new car. So I can understand him opting for the stability of the Citroën team that he knows well, a setup that he's become very comfortable with, but it obviously leaves Toyota looking for a number one driver still.
Yeah, I still believe the long-term future for somebody like Toyota and logistically where they are and everything, I think Jari Matti's name is all over that job, and I know he's still under contract with VW, but I would be very, very surprised if somebody like Jari Matti's name wasn't on the window of that car for 2017. One thing they have got an abundance of within Toyota and within the infrastructure already is some very, very good test drivers.
Yes, they have. I think Mäkinen's already said that he's got access, obviously, to Juho Hänninen, and also Mikko Hirvonen will be doing some testing for them. So, you know, there's no shortage of experience in terms of the development. The car will be very well tested by those guys. They've got access to fantastic roads in Finland to put a lot of mileage on the car. But I'm sure they'll still be keen to get a number one driver in that car as soon as possible to help develop the car around them.
Are you surprised that one of the names that did come up today, and obviously we always quote it because it is the Wednesday Bible, as it were, that we always make reference to motorsport news over here in the UK. Thierry Neuville's name has come up as a possible number one driver for Toyota, and I genuinely just don't. I didn't, and I'm not just kind of Emperor's New Clothes jumping on the bandwagon with Thierry, because obviously he's had a tough year this year. But I always raised an eyebrow the fact that he was considered to be a number one driver, and I think there's so much more that people perhaps don't realise responsibility wise that lies with the number one driver, i.e. testing and kind of giving base settings, etc., for the car.
Yeah, Thierry's had a difficult year, hasn't he? We've talked about it on numerous occasions. And I think, quite honestly, the answer to that question is, can Thierry get back to the old Thierry Neuville that we saw at M Sport and we saw flashes of at Hyundai? Because, you know, when he was at M Sport, and I think, did he finish second in the World Championship? I'd have to check. But he had a fantastic year. The speed was great. He very much looked like he could be a world champion of the future, and he could certainly be a number one driver. Since then, he's had a loss of confidence. He's had Hayden Padden come alongside that's put him under pressure. And it's certainly had an effect on him, hasn't it? So difficult to say at the minute. Let's see how he gets on next year and see if he can rebuild some of that momentum. And then I guess we'll know the answer to that question in a little bit more detail.
What's interesting is there's been an interview with him that has been printed, and he was making reference to the fact that comparisons directly between him and his teammates were somewhat unfair, as normally he was running 4th, 5th on the road and they were 10th, 11th on the road, which gave them a very, very different rally to go at, and in many ways it wasn't an apples for apples comparison. Do you think that is a viable argument, 4 or 5 car difference?
I think Sebastian Ogier had one or two things to say about running first on the road, didn't he? And did he win the World Championship? Yes, he did. So, I don't know. Over the course of a year, over the course of the World Championship, I think these things balance out to a certain degree, and I don't know. I don't like to say that he's looking for excuses there, but like I said, Ogier still won the world championship running first on the road.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, obviously, is that the number one driver status has come up, and Hyundai, they've made sure that the at the press launch that the names listed on the rear window of this this rather lovely looking four door version of the i20 now, but they've made reference to the fact that the names have been put in alphabetical order. It's nothing to do with status or anything like that.
Yeah, and I guess they're still in a new team. It's a new car. They've still got Danny Sordo on the team. That, you know, Danny's doing a good, reliable job. In fact, he's been very quick over the second half of 2015. But you certainly wouldn't see Sordo necessarily as a number one driver. And ultimately, Padden probably still hasn't got the experience of some of the rallies to put him as a number one driver, despite the speed he's shown. So, you know, they've said they're going to rotate the drivers. And I guess if you look at the experience of the team that they have, they're probably going to need to do that.
I think the other thing as well, which certainly, and you know, friend of the show, he's been on, and you know, he certainly didn't pull any punches at the time when we had Hayden on. He said obviously, you know, there was no love lost between the two of them, but he's in this kind of family get together, as it were, high and high. They've kind of said, right, okay, you know, time to press the reset button, get ourselves back together as a team to move forward for 2016. So, you know, maybe that, you know, bit of team bonding or something, you know, in close season will also possibly help the job.
Yeah, it may well do. I think once there's an edge there, it's difficult to remove that edge, isn't it? But you know, they've got three good drivers on the books. It's still difficult to see one of those three drivers challenging Volkswagen for the world championship win. But you know, another new car, they've got another new car coming in 2017. There's no doubt in the seriousness of the program, and they do still need a front running driver, don't they? And maybe Padden will develop into that over the next year, or as we just said, maybe Thierry Neuville will come back fighting.
I just wonder as well, the you know, again, we've got our Hyundai corner, haven't we? We thought we were going to lose it. I don't think we'll ever lose the Hyundai corner, but the announcement of the R5 car, and basically it's going to be for homologation in the middle of next year. They're not going to register for WRC2 with it. They basically want to get some test kilometres under it, and obviously Kevin Abering has been earmarked for that particular role. But I just, my concern is that the reasoning behind the R5 car now being pushed out, you've just pinpointed two things. They've got a new car for 2016, they've got to develop a 2017 world car, which has to be obviously at the forefront, and they're trying to develop an R5 car.
Yeah, it's an awful lot, particularly on a new team. I mean, they've set up a customer department now for the R5 car, but you've still got to develop it. You've still got to use your resources, and it's definitely a big ask. Let's give them a little bit of time and see what happens.
So we did reach out to Chris this morning, just going back to obviously the big news with regards to Chris's 3-year deal with Citroen. We did reach out to Chris. I'm sure he's a very, very busy man. And as we went into record this section of the show, unfortunately, we couldn't get hold of Chris. But I think it was something that Julian alluded to, Julian Porter, of course, who we had on a couple of weeks ago. He alluded to this kind of 3-year deal where he'd get a year's kind of in the old car plus Tesla and everything else, and then two really, really good years to go and have a proper crack in. I just wonder whether Jules, he was ahead of the curve on this one.
Well, you know, if you look at Chris's recent career, obviously it's been built around Citroën. Citroën gave him the chance to have a crack at the World Championship, whilst Yves Matton has been critical of Chris over some parts of this year, as we've talked about. You know, that's the job of a team manager to motivate his driver. Whether we like that from the outside is irrelevant. You know, that's the way he saw fit to make Chris respond, if you like, and Chris did a great job at the end of the season. But the point I'm getting at is Yves Maton has really built this part of Chris Meek's career, and I'm sure Chris respects that. And Citroën have done an incredible job in rallying over the last 10 years. But not only that, they've gone into World Touring Cars and they've absolutely dominated. Yes, rallying might have suffered a little bit, but that's because the World Touring Car program was maybe the focus of their budget. Now, rallying is going to be number one again. And who was world champion the last time Citroën fully focused on rallying? And you know, you would have to say that Citroën won the championship multiple times. So to give all that up for a brand new team, as much as it's Tommy Mäkinen, as much as it's the biggest car manufacturer in the world, you can understand why he went with maybe the safe option.
I just wonder as well, and as you say, the fact that the World Touring Car team's been dropped, I've heard on the grapevine as well that Khaled will have 6 rounds in one of the DSs next year. Now, obviously, this news has broke that they will run 2-car team for and it'll be run by a PH for both Chris and for Sebastien Leboeuf. Now, obviously, Khaled will have a 6-round program as well, I've been led to believe. And I think that's the end of the Abu Dhabi deal as well. I think that effectively runs down the Abu Dhabi deal. Now, whether obviously the Abu Dhabi money was welcome when they diverted attentions to World Touring Cars, I just wonder now, without a sponsor almost, but will Citroën be again more focused, if that makes sense, because it's their own money? Do you kind of see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, well, I think, like you said, the Abu Dhabi deal came about to a degree when Citroën were looking for funding because they were diverting a big portion of their motorsport budget somewhere else. Yes, absolutely. This new World Championship program is going to be the focus of Citroën's attention. And, you know, like we've seen since the early 2000s, if Citroën focus on something 100%, then they do an incredible job. So, yeah, I think the car will be a World Championship winner, to a degree, certainly a rally winner. Will it win the World Championship over a year? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But I think with Citroën's full focus behind it, the car will be up to the job.
So, well, I guess by now, because entries open, of course, for Monte Carlo this coming Friday. So we'll kind of know where everybody's at. I think all the teams have now are pretty much settled. In many instances, I think Musical Chairs is over. Obviously, we spoke quite a bit last week with regards to the co-driver Musical Chairs, and obviously at the early part of the program, you and I were discussing who would end up with Andreas Mikkelsen, and obviously that was sorted out later in the program. Now, by all accounts, that young man, whose name I'm just trying to think of now, it's just come into my head, and then it's just gone out of my head again, but I'll come back to that in a second. But basically, he's part of the evening management setup, and they are long-term friends, and it was kind of in the plan that it was always going to happen, and perhaps Ole's decision triggered that happening sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think that one of the key things was that Ola knew that he'd only got one more year, as it were. And let's face it, that probably wasn't his decision. He'd been told he only had one more year alongside Andreas. And then when another opportunity's come up to go somewhere else, then he jumped at it. And, you know, you would expect Osberg to be in the World Championship for certainly more than one year. So I guess he just saw it as a way of, you know, securing a longer term future in WRC.
Yeah, I'm just as I say, it's Anders Jaeger was the name I was trying to think of, who again obviously have come up through this even management again. I didn't even know they really existed until about 6 months ago. I don't know if that's my naivety with regards to the sport or whatever. I'm sure there'll be other people out there who've known all about them and everything else, but yeah, I just find it, I suppose I don't now with regards to how people have to go about funding and things like that and finding budget and all these different things. Perhaps there's a lot more of these management companies than perhaps we realise. But still, now we're talking about obviously management and young drivers and everything else, even management, all these guys. One thing, that story I did want to come to, and obviously it becomes a little bit UK centric, but then again it opens out this story because it's the announcement in the British Rally Championship of the junior prize. And I am genuinely struggling outside of the World Rally Championship to find, and I've tried to find, a better prize anywhere in the world.
I think you're right. At the minute, in the current environment in motorsport, where we haven't got the manufacturer support in the national championships like we used to have, it's an incredible prize. You know, as you said, it's worth £60,000 towards doing the DMAC Drive Championship in the WRC, and it's a fantastic prize. And I'm sure we'll put massive impetus behind the Junior Championship in BRC during its relaunch, if you like, next year.
So basically, the situation is that the winner of the Junior British Rally Championship will get a subsidised prize drive in the 2017 Drive DMAC Fiesta Trophy on 5 rounds of the WRC. The Junior BRC category will run on DMAC tyres, which I think is a completely and utterly understandable situation. I'm sure one or two people will have comments with regard to control tyres. I think it's an absolute no-brainer. I think anybody who would begrudge any type of control tyre when the tyre manufacturer is putting up an amazing prize as they are, pretty much needs the head testing, not to put too fine a point on it, to be honest with you. Now, obviously, it is open to all R2 category cars. I would be very, very surprised, and I don't know about you, Ryan, but you know, the R2 208 has been kind of the choice of many in the European Rally Championship, and it has kind of been benchmarked as the car to have. But I would be very, very surprised if anybody is outside of driving a Fiesta in order to get their mindset, even the naturally aspirated version of the Fiesta, as opposed to turbocharged. I would be very surprised if we don't have a glut of Fiesta R2s in their various guises in the British Rally Championship.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the prize is in a Fiesta, but then I guess, having said that, it could in some cases be down to what car some of the drivers have currently. And we've also seen the Opel Adam be very strong on the European Championship. We've also got the Vauxhall Adam coming along, obviously the same car, but there's going to be a Vauxhall team in the British Championship next year. We've seen that announcement as well, so presumably that's going to have a young driver, a junior driver in it. Yeah, it would certainly help for the following year, but having said that, if I had an R2 car of any description, I think I would be trying to go for that prize.
You would have to genuinely try and make it happen. And I think obviously this bounces on the announcements, albeit it kind of seemed almost lip service announcement because of my involvement with it on Wales Rally GB was the DMAC Drive Fiesta ST announcement last week for the National Gravel Championship over here in the UK. But if you actually now chart it, if a junior wins that, they get free tyres in the British Rally Championship the following year from DMAC. So if you work it out now, you can start off, you know, a junior can go into, and one of the, you know, there'll be Ben Creeley, whose dad was a very, very fast man in your days doing the Evo Challenger course, Brendan, Sam Billingham, and also George Lepley, three very, very fast juniors who come through junior rallying in this country. One of those guys could go into do the BTRDA National Fiesta DMAC Drive Trophy in association with Copart next year, and they could win that and win their tyres, and all they've then got to do is get the R2 car, which I know it sounds it all they've got to do, but having your tyre bill paid for you for the following year as part of that prize, and also then you could then potentially win that championship, would see one of those juniors in WRC within inside 2 years.
And it's great to have those stepping stones in place. I mean, as I just alluded to earlier, it used to be that was the job of a manufacturer, be it maybe Peugeot in the past or Ford or whoever it might have been with their 1-8 championships. But it's great to see DMAC stepping in and you know, putting their weight behind young drivers to help them progress. We've already heard that DMAC are supporting Max Vatanen in the British Championship next year. They're obviously supporting Ott Tanak in a WRC car for a full programme in WRC. So, you know, it is Dick Cormack, the owner of DMAC, the managing director, if you like, he's putting a fantastic amount of effort behind supporting drivers, and that's fantastic to see, because as we know, there isn't too many people doing that and rallying at the minute.
No, not at all. Now, We mentioned this on last week's programme, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't pushed it enough, but I wanted to do, and I don't know whether you thought too much about it, the heroes and villains, the pantomime heroes and villains in rallying over the course of 2015. Now, my hero, which is very, very easy, and I could imagine him almost being that hero in the pantomime, and I mean that with the greatest respect, but he's got that cheeky smile and he's got that swagger in his step, and more so than probably any other driver other than Sebastian Ogier and perhaps Andreas Mikkelsen at the moment. And we mentioned him earlier as the high-end eye driver, Hayden Padden. I could see him as a hero in a pantomime. I really can.
Well, you've obviously put a lot of thought into this. What with a full cape and everything?
Absolutely. And you know, I don't mean that in an unhealthy way, Hayden. If you're listening, by the way, because I know sometimes you have listened to the program in the past, so don't think there's any other issues behind that. It's just purely as I see you as a hero. Now, villains. This is going to be the interesting one. There's very, very obvious villains. You could argue, perhaps. Almost before today's announcements, I perhaps would have lent towards a villain being Citroën. And it's funny because we've also got another guest, which I'm going to come to in a second. But now they've kind of made the announcement that Chris has got the 3-year deal, then I can't really call them a villain anymore. Now, Citroën came up. We've got Paul Coleman on the program a little bit later on, who I had a very, very great chat with, by the way. And there's a few things you need to listen to now because you weren't privy to that particular chat, Ryan. But I did Heroes and Villains with Paul, and his was Sebastian Loeb and the villain Citroën. So whether he changes mind now he's heard that, because obviously Paul and I recorded that on Monday, today being Wednesday. So whether he changed his mind. So I'm a little bit unsure, but as I say, up until this morning, I was with Paul. I was with my villain of the season was going to be Citroën.
Well, I haven't, I have to say, I haven't come up with a villain until you started talking about it now. But funnily enough, I was just thinking of heroes and villains over the years. And one man who could fall into both categories, but this year, I guess, he's a hero again, is Francois Delacour. But he would have made a fantastic villain in the past as well.
He's got that look in his eye, hasn't he? He's just that, that steely look.
You wouldn't argue.
No.
You wouldn't argue.
I briefly tried to chat to him on Monte Carlo, and I'm no wilting flower, believe you me, but he made me wilt.
Yeah, quite an imposing character, like you said, with those eyes, with his steely determination, with his fiery nature. There's not too many drivers known for punching the co-drivers over the years, but he does fall into that category.
No, do you know what? We don't care. We'll tell you where we get material from and everything else. But I love WRC Plus, and when it goes into the kind of close season, they put up some of the old videos or the old DVDs that you possibly would have had to have bought back in the day, and now they put them on the network and allow you to watch them. And I watched one the other night, which was Crazy Moments in WRC, and there was the Delacour incident. There was also the Gigi Garley incident, where he broke his co-driver's nose with a water bottle. But prior to that, he had smacked them in the mouth as well. You've seen that one. And funnily enough, how it ties in really, really nicely with the whole Citroën thing. When Citroën ran the private Zara's in the blue colours, who was Loeb's teammate? Who was it? Xavier Pons.
Pons, yeah.
His co-driver also got, I seem to remember, a smack in the mouth. I think it was
Carlos Del Barrio, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, in Germany.
He was pretty much in tears at stage end, I seem to remember.
Yeah, he was. He was absolutely gutted, wasn't he? Because they went off into the vines and covered the car completely in unproduced wine, shall we say. And it was quite a comedy moment afterwards. But I don't think Pons was too impressed at the time.
So I suppose they all kind of fit into that because they're all friends now. I'm sure they are. Now, I'm still kind of unsure on my villain, so I'm going to come back to that a little bit later on. Now, one thing I was going to go to before we go off for a cheeky break is I'm getting messages I'm getting messages left, right and centre from people coming in to talk about stuff that's going to be coming up on the programme a bit later on. So what we're going to do, we're going to go to a very, very cheeky break, and we're going to come back with the man that managed to put 12 cars, with one of them driven by Ryan Champion, by the way, through the East African Safari, and managed to get them all to the end, put back in the container and get them sent back to him, which I think is a feat within itself, bearing in mind that RC was behind the wheel of one of them. We'll be back very, very shortly with Richard Tuttle.
Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Every Wednesday, 8 till 9 p.m. UK time. All the latest news, views and gossip from the world of rally. Interviews with the biggest names, plus the best comment and insight from people who know their sh. Find us on Twitter at @absolute_rally and join the debate. Absolute Rally, every Wednesday, 8 till 9 p.m. UK time. Online at absoluterally.com. Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. As I was saying before our cheeky break, we've got Ryan Champion, and I wanted to kind of celebrate the fact that friend of the show, guest of the show in the last few months as well, Richard Tuttle, who managed to take 12 Porsches to the East African Safari and bring 12 back, even when Ryan Champion had had his hands on one. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Richard Tuttle.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back and safely here to tell the tale.
Well, that's what we wanted you to do, and genuinely, as I say, it was a fascinating tale. Obviously, the beauty of having Ryan with you is that we were obviously getting reports during the event, which is quite a unique position for, I think, for any programme to be in, having one of the presenters actually doing the events, and also obviously talking about what was going on there. Now, I was watching some of your video blogs as well, which I think it's just an amazing thing to actually do those video blogs. Where did that idea come from?
Well, funny enough, it came from a chap I met probably 6 weeks before we went, who was doing, I think, something like 34 marathons day after day from Land's End to John O'Groats. And he did one every night. And his were much better than mine, I might add. But it was quite a nice way to follow his progress. And so it was an interesting idea to have a go at. But not sure I'll repeat the feat, because it's quite hard to talk into an iPhone on your own in the middle of some location in the middle of Africa. But there we are. It provided a little insight into what we get up to.
I think so. I'll tell you what I learned about it as well. And to be fair, I didn't really fully understand the concept of what was going on. And I hadn't even asked Ryan about it. I just spotted a pink Porsche. And now I'm guilty. I have actually drove a pink rally car, and I took quite a lot of stick for that.
Rightly so.
Yeah, quite right. And it was bright pink as well, and it had just come out of the body shop. And I did the Bambury rally back in 2001, I think it was, with Volkswagen, and it was a bright pink Polo GTR, and I took lots of stick. So whenever I see a pink rally car, it always brings back moments of ridicule. And then I was going to kind of ask the question, and then I watched the video with regards to what was behind the team and the Race for Health, and what an amazing story that is as well.
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary what they're doing, and it's a huge privilege for us to be involved in it. And I think what's nice is the motorsport can be seen by various people in different lights, but what's clear here is these guys are going to go and do some great events anyway. But and so they're going to spend their money, and they're going to have a great time, and they're going to take a lot of enjoyment from that. But what they're actually doing is putting back whatever they can as they go along into some great causes, which are both international and local. And I think the highlight for me was their pop-up opticians, which they did every day of the rally in various locations, and to see local people come in on the back of the Safari rally and obviously through Race for Health and have the ability to have proper eye test and walk away with glasses at no cost was really lovely. And the smiles on these people's faces when they saw the difference wearing proper prescription glasses was wonderful. And that's just a small part of what they do, but it's wonderful to be involved, and it's lovely to see what they're up to.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, they're pretty much bulletproof with regards to ridicule of driving a pink rally car as well, I think, for that, on that basis alone.
I think they get a free pass. Yeah, you can't take the mickey out of them, given they're supporting such great causes.
Very much so, very much so. Now, chomping at the bit, RC, who took a fair bit of stick off me, is sat on the sidelines. And I know he's got some stuff he wants to ask you, which I find very bizarre, considering he spent best part of a month with you.
But actually, the only way I get to talk to Richard Tuttle is to interview him. You know, he's so busy that it's very difficult to speak to this man.
Ryan, we spent 2 weeks together, but as I say, as Ryan will tell you, we didn't actually spend any time together. Perfect solution.
But I mean, Safari was obviously incredibly successful for the team, as Tony just said. You know, there was 12 cars, five in the Team Tidal Race for Health team, and then the Tuttle Porsche team as well. But it's a massive logistical challenge, isn't it, to get 12 cars to the start of the rally, let alone the end of the rally.
Yeah, of course it is. It's a logistical challenge to get one car to the start of any rally. And what we have become known for and what we do out there is extraordinary in some respects. But of course, for us, it's a great challenge. It's a project we dedicate, I'd say, at least 18 months out of every 2 years to. And you know, you as more than anyone, Ryan, know what it means to us and know what goes into it. But it always is a privilege to be involved, and it's wonderful to come back with a successful campaign done, dusted, happy customers, and great memories. So it's an amazing thing. But yeah, quite a lot of work.
Now, when you say successful, I mean, I think seven cars in the top 11. That's some success on a 3,500 kilometre rally. I see Rally Mexico next year running an 80k stage. Well, I mean, 80k is pretty much the average, isn't it, in Kenya?
Well, it's an extraordinary event. And the funny thing is, you know, when the weekend before you're out on a British Championship Historic Rally, which is a day's rallying, and you do 45, 50 stage miles, then you get to Kenya and you're starting to recalibrate what is a long stage and a short stage, and you're looking at the day ahead of you and you say, yeah, don't worry, it's only an 80k stage. Well, you know, that's a national rally. So you do recalibrate. But what's extraordinary is that the cars cope with it so well. The guys who look after them are extraordinary, you know, just great, great people. And of course, clients, drivers, co-drivers, all get stuck in and go out and have a great time. It's a very, very special thing to be involved in.
Now, obviously, one of the very special things about the result this year was the fact that you took Stig Blomqvist to his first Safari win. I mean, a lot of people listening are probably surprised at that. They'll be looking back through the records saying, surely Stig won the Safari, but this was his first win.
Yeah, he went to Kenya first time to do the Safari Rally in 1971. And a little aside, which is, really know the right word, was rather sweet and it's a wonderful story, is that this time was his first time in Kenya without Bjorn, ever. So not only had he not won, he'd never travelled, and I do mean travelled to Kenya, without Bjorn being in the same country. So that, I think, we found out at the beginning of the rally, which was extraordinary to hear. And then to give him the opportunity to put what went wrong right, as it were, 2 years ago, because he lost on the last stage because of a puncture, was really, really special. And he's a man of few words, as we all know, like really few words, but at the end of the stage, he was a man of no words. He couldn't speak. And so I think it really, really was a lovely tick in the box for him.
Now, so you've actually won the East African Safari Classic with both Bjorn Vestergaard and Stig Blomqvist, you know, two legends of the sport. What does that bring to the team? Does it bring pressure and challenges because they have been world champions, or does it actually just bring experience that makes life easier?
It's certainly given we've worked with them and others in the last 20 years, it's helped us as a team enormously. I mean, Bjorn's largely responsible for how good the car is today in terms of its handling and its drivability because of the amount of testing and work we've done with him before. Stig has driven for us many, many times, but he's a slightly different character, and he's very, very laid back, and he's pretty relaxed. And yeah, he'll give you an opinion on things, but certainly when he was with Bjorn in the team 2 years ago, it was just a question of whatever Bjorn has, I'll have. So it's really nice to have drivers of that caliber in the team. It's nice to win rallies, as we all know, but actually from a team point of view, I take as much pride and as much satisfaction, which might sound a little odd, for all of our client drivers to have safe, enjoyable, great competition. And so, yes, one can get distracted with winning, but it's equally important to get all the cars safely home with no major dramas. And thankfully, we achieved that.
Now, Tuttle Porsche, until the last couple of years, has really been known as a historic team looking after air-cooled cars. But we spoke to you earlier in the year about the RGT programme, and working with another legendary driver, the famous Francois Delacour, you've actually won the FIA RGT Cup. Again, that's a fantastic result for the team this year.
Yeah, no, we've had a good year, actually. We, as you say, we won the RGT title, we've won Safari, we've won Spa 6 Hours, we've won a big event in at the Nordschleife, obviously racing, and we've won two long touring events, Transamerica and Road to Mandalay. So it's amazing, actually, and it's brilliant. But I'm sure it hasn't really sunk in, but It's wonderful stuff. But as I say, the core of what we do is providing great road race and rally cars for all sorts of wonderful people, and we continue to try and do our best wherever we are in whatever arena. But the Safari actually gives us an amazing insight, because we learn so much every year, regardless of the fact we've been there time and time again. And of course, then that gets carried across to everything from the Safari cars through to the RGT, and having wonderful adventures with Francois Delacour, who is, as you know, the most extraordinary bloke you'll ever come across.
Now, what a lot of people listening might not know is that, as well as the Porsche involvement, Team Tuttle have had a bit of an involvement with ProDrive over the years. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, in some ways, you could say it sort of began there a little bit. Pre-ProDrive, as I'm sure most people know, it was called DR Autosport, David Richards Autosport. And our first assignment for them, if you like, was David came up and bought Dad's road car because he wanted a Porsche to present to Rothman. So he bought his road car. Dad said, "What do you want it for?" DR said, "Well, it's for a presentation." And Dad said, "Fine, you can buy my car as long as I can do the work." So we then went on to do paint work, body work, accident work, for DR Autosport, then through to ProDrive from Rothmans Porsches, which was all the Middle East cars, Dakar cars, M3s, 6R4s, every single legacy Colin McRae crashed, my father probably personally repaired and painted all the Imprezas. And we stopped pretty much with our involvement with ProDrive at the beginning of WRC cars. So we've had a very, very long, happy relationship with them. They're 4 miles down the road. And again, certainly from the Porsche stuff, we learned an awful lot about Porsche body shells back then. That's one of our USPs in terms of how we build our cars. But they're an amazing, amazing team, a real benchmark for anyone involved in motorsport. And we've had a great relationship.
Well, so like you said, it's been an amazing year. 2015 coming to an end. No Safari on the horizon next year. So what's next?
Well, next time I see you, with a bit of luck, and there's a chance we might have a beer and chat, we'll be in Sweden at below zero ice driving. So looking forward to that. The cars are leaving this week or next week. We're actually loading some of the vans up today for that. There's an exciting new rally in Argentina. There's a new British Rally Championship, which I'd love to have an involvement. I'd love to at least see the 997 out in a forest somewhere in the country this year. The normal historic stuff carries on, the regional championships, Belgium championship, and yeah, we'd like to see some historic Porsches running around in the UK again. So usual stuff, massively busy in terms of competition, and in terms of racing and road car build, I'm pleased to say we're absolutely flat out. Loads of exciting, lovely new cars to build, and it's all to do again. And that's the funny thing. We'll have a week off over Christmas, but get some energy, roll up our sleeves and crack on again. But there's always, always great stuff to do. And we'll do our very best to do as much as we can.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Right, and just coming back obviously to the story that we've been speaking about off and on probably since the incarnation of Absolute Rally, even towards the end, I suppose, of the days of Total Rally. But we're all gaming fans. We all love the dirt game franchise, and obviously the big question that's been on everybody's lips has been about when it's coming to a console and everything else. So we thought, well, as the news is kind of already broke, I thought it'd be quite a good time anyway to catch up with Paul Coleman. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Paul Coleman.
Hi, thank you very much for having me back on.
Well, obviously Ryan and I are kind of, we're not quite as committed gamers as some of your other avid fans, because I'll be honest, I'm staggered, and I'm sure you are as well to some degree, but then in other ways not. So it's a bit of a strange statement that, but it really has just took hold, and there's leagues everywhere now for the online gaming community and things like that. It really has took off, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've been I was always quietly confident that this was going to be a successful game. I think the formula that we worked to was what we believed players were going to want. But it's really kicked on now. I think the key thing is it surprised the guys upstairs, the businessmen, the guys who never thought that a hardcore rally game would really do the numbers that this has done. We've met our targets already, and that's saying something, because that's gone, you know, well in advance of expectations. This is targets for lifetime sales. We've done that already in the 7 months that this game's been in early access. So, you know, they're happy, which means that we've been given a little bit more slack for being able to do things bigger and better in future, which I think is really positive news, and hopefully any of the fans listening to this will kind of read into what that means. But taking it to console was obviously the next step, and you know, it's been great to actually tell people that that's what we're doing. I think there's a lot of people like Ryan, for example, who, you know, weren't going to take that step to go out and buy a PC specifically to play this game. I know that he already had a PS4 and he was essentially just waiting for the right rally game to play on it. And I think there'll be a lot of other people out there that, you know, aren't committed enough to go out and spend thousands and thousands of pounds on a gaming PC, but want to get their hands on Dirt Rally. Well, and delighted to be able to announce it. Really,
well, I'm very much in the same kind of corner as Ryan, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, I've kind of been waiting, but I've been watching some of the footage that people have been putting up on YouTube and kind of following some stories online, and there's a Facebook page as well for one of the Rally Forum communities that have set up a league there, and I've watched some of the in-car on that only earlier today, funnily enough, as well. I suppose, and this is going to be a tricky one to answer, but the fact that the as you've just described, you know, there's people who've got proper gaming PCs, is there a pressure now, the fact that it's gone so well there, that you're actually going to take it to the console, and the console obviously is going to, it's not quite going to live up to that, is it, I guess?
The pressure is always there. I think the exciting thing about this project has been the fact that we've led on PC, and the guys that have spent all that money on those incredible rigs are much more discerning consumers. They know what they want. They know the quality that they want it to be at. And yeah, while they're willing to accept things that are a little rough around the edges to begin with, ultimately they want the quality to arrive at the point where they're satisfied with the amount of investment that they've put in. So, you know, I think we've learned a lot along the way, and one of the key things I want to say is that the experience that you will get, how the game feels in your hand, is not going to change. Graphically, there may be some areas where it's not as good as it would be on a top-end PC, but it's going to be right up there with a good spec PC. So we're talking about a PC that would probably cost you about £1,000 to put together. That's the level of graphical quality that you're going to get on your console. So we're not holding back, but the main focus of this game has been what the cars feel like to drive. That has always been the focus, not so much the graphical fidelity, although the game looks fantastic. And that is the key thing that my focus is making sure that the console game feels as good as it does on PC. Because when you get your hands on the steering wheel and when you play the game and feel it in your hands, that's what is making this game stand apart from many of the games that we've created previously here. And that's been the most exciting thing. You know, people are, you know, really excited about how real it feels, not so much how it looks.
And one of the things that kind of sticks out from watching, I think you tipped off Ryan last time you were on the show about is it Twitch, the app or something? I'm trying to think what it's called.
Twitch,
the app.
It's kind of a new thing. As I said, I think last time, it's a way for players to stream the games that they're playing at that time. It's also a platform for where esports is a big sort of buzzword at the minute, but when games being played competitively, Twitch is generally the platform that gets used for that. And you can get people with like a million viewers watching them just play a game and chat over the top of it. So we've actually had a guy who's been streaming Dirt Rally pretty much every night since the game came out, just chatting away to the people watching him. He gets about 150 people watching him over an evening. But it's great fun. I think it's a really nice medium for people to be able to spectate this stuff.
I think where I was going to go is that I find it really amazing, and I know this is something that you personally had a lot of involvement in because of obviously the way you went back and you got involved with co-driving and stuff like that. And I think always, even the best games over the years have always been a tad vague when it comes to somebody who's driven rally cars, as I have, albeit the levels that I have. You kind of know what notes are meant to be. I am staggered by how good the notes are on this game.
Yeah, well, I'll accept the fact that I did the calls, but John Tucker actually was the guy that did the recce's with me, and it's a lot of it is down to him. We took an approach of making route notes, not pace notes. I think in the past, certainly when Nicky was doing the Colin McRae games, he would go through and recce all the stages, but because the cars were all driving at the same sort of speed, he was able to do them as pace notes in the way that he would write them for Colin at the time, which I think was fantastic because it gave that level of kind of quality, and it really made you feel like you were driving as Colin in those games. The spectrum of cars that we have available for the player and rally, from the 1960s Mini all the way through to the current breed of WRC machinery, meant that our stages, you know, the calls have to be written as route notes, where we're describing the corners, not the pace that you should be attacking them at. And so we used, we've got some tools that allow us to measure the angle of each corner based on the racing line and based on the way that a number of people have driven those stages to see what sort of line they're taking into the corners. So we kind of take a best estimate of what the angle should be. We spit that out into a big sort of data file, and then John and I would sit down and we'd go through and kind of adjust accordingly. So this should feel pretty consistent across the game. This should feel more detailed than we've ever done before. And I think that's actually turned some gamers off. I think they're getting a bit of information overload. But, you know, as we've done with a lot of things in this game, I wasn't making a game for gamers. I was making a game for rally fans. And people who are in the know, who understand co-drivers, can appreciate it for what it is. And what I want is for the players who perhaps don't appreciate it to feel like they need to take that step up to become closer to rally rather than bringing the game or
dumbing
rather than
it down,
bringing
basically.
Rally closer to the gamer. Yeah,
so basically not dumbing the game down is getting people to almost step up to the plate and want to know more and want to learn about it to be better at it.
Absolutely. I guess you see it a bit like taking food as an example. You now see butchers that are like, or farmers that are making the growing like sorry, not growing cattle, but breeding cattle that are much more like sort of about the breed and about a particular flavour. And it's all about the connoisseur nowadays. And I think that's kind of how we've approached this. We wanted to just get everything as right as we possibly could and to really speak to those guys that are passionate about the sport. Because with that passion instilled in the product, you know, then people come to it with the knowledge that it is right and that nothing's pretend.
I think as analogies go, that's got to be probably one of our most interesting analogies in the last 12 months of making this programme. It has to be said. I do have to ask, by the way, with regards to the cars and things, obviously you have been releasing more cars during the course of the year. Have any of the manufacturers got involved? Have they helped you, or have you kind of had to do it off your own back?
A lot of it is off our own back. Hyundai helped us with the i20. They invited us out to a test session that Kevin Abering was running, and they let us do a recording session in much the same way that Ryan did with his Subaru. But it kind of depends. Like some of them find us a bit of an annoyance. Other ones find us absolutely fine to work with. It's interesting. You speak to BMW for the Minis and Ford, they're massive companies. They deal with lots of gaming companies for a wide variety of stuff. So they're much more formulaic in the way that they go about stuff. And it's a process, and you know, it's just about ticking boxes and getting stuff approved. You go and speak to some of the smaller manufacturers and they bend over backwards and really try and help out because, you know, you're promoting their brand for them and they see it as quite a good platform for that to happen. And then there are other ones that are just difficult. I don't want to name any names, but, you know, it should be fairly apparent from the cars that we've got in the list and those that we haven't got in the list which ones are more challenging than others. And, you know, it almost gets to a point where it's not worth even trying to pursue the car anymore because it's costing us more money than it's going to get us back by putting that vehicle in the game. Just chase who are essentially lawyers and bureaucrats getting in the way of stuff. And, you know, we've got an incredibly talented licensing and research team who are multilingual. It's not a language barrier thing. They understand how people work over in France or out in Japan. They're really good at getting this information out of the manufacturers, but there are some of them that just do not want to play ball. And, you know, yeah, you could say maybe, okay, I will name a name to give an example. So Citroën were being particularly challenging. We did wonder whether that was because Sebastian Loeb had his own game that was being developed and maybe there'd been some suggestion that those guys were, like, kind of getting in the way of our approaches. But I don't think that was actually the case because we did speak to Yves Maton directly. He was happy for us to feature Petter Solberg's DS3, for example. But then it all came back down to the lawyers again and it started to become really hard work. So, you know, really, you're at the mercy of whoever's at the end of the phone a lot of the time. And it can be really frustrating because when you're trying to put together that greatest hits of rally cars, there's some glaring omissions in there through no fault of our own or even probably the guys at the manufacturers who care about this stuff. They'd want the car to be in there, but somebody who doesn't quite get it or who's there to do business just is being awkward, and it sort of makes things much harder than it needs to be.
Wow. So moving forward onto the console, because that's what we've all got kind of excited about now. The hardcore gamers with the PCs are catered for and then some at the moment, and they're loving it and they're having their own leagues and everything else. Ryan and I have been sat on the touchline just waiting for this to happen, and we've still got another 4 months to go, I realise that. But with regards to the console version, are you going to have that online type community? Are you going to try and integrate that type of thing as well?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's not going to be an identical game. There are things that the consoles won't let us do that we've been able to do on PC, but there are other things that are much better on consoles. So stuff like the voice communication, being able to chat to your friends while you're playing, is much more integral to the system. So we're able to get some benefits, and there's some areas that we've had to par back. But, you know, for the most part, we're going for parity across the board. So what you get in the PC version should be what you get in the console version, bar these small little restraints that the consoles put on that. In terms of the difficulty, it's going to be the same experience. We might adjust some of the AI times to make them a little bit more gentle on the earlier part of the game, but I think that's one of the things that we're seeing now that the game is out of early access and the hardcore guys who have been playing and maybe introducing their friends to it, they're finding it a bit more challenging than the early adopters had. So, you know, I don't think it would do any harm to soften off some of those earlier championships in the career. But it's real minor tweaks. It's not, we're not going to be changing things dramatically. It's not going to be a dumbed down experience for the console guys either, because, you know, ultimately the game is an authentic expression of rallying, and to take that and ruin it just because there's a supposition that console gamers are less hardcore. I don't think that's true. I think people are passionate about games, and this particular game speaks to an audience who are passionate about Rally, and those fans should get the same level of experience that the PC guys got.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of disappointed now we're still 4 months away, but I should be glad, because obviously the last time we spoke, it was, we're going to have to see how it goes. Now, I know, I'm pretty certain deep down you knew that you were going to make this happen, but you didn't really want to put your head on the block, so to speak. But yeah, I think we should embrace the fact that it is going to happen, and we're going to have to set something up for Ryan and I to go head to head at the launch of this. I think we're going to have to do something.
Definitely. Maybe that should be your first broadcast on Twitch.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
How could we do that? We're going to have to, we'll have to have a chat with you about that. We'll have to try and do something.
We can help you out. Maybe I'll get involved as well.
Yeah.
Look, I genuinely didn't know when I last spoke to you that we were going to go onto console. Obviously, I really hoped that the game would be successful enough for that to happen, but the company had not made any decision at that point. We didn't know how we were going to do it, if that decision needed to happen. And, you know, the positive reception that this game has had over the last 7 months made those decisions easier and easier and easier, until the point where if we hadn't have done it, we'd have been very, very stupid. So, you know, it's that snowball effect. When something goes out there and people love it and they get excited about it, that builds momentum, and we just went from there. So, yeah, I mean, it may have sounded like I was being intentionally cagey about it, but at that, on that particular point, we just didn't know at that stage. But yeah, if you'd asked me again probably about 2 months later, then I would have been lying.
fantastic. Listen, we're having a little bit of a theme. This is our final show before Christmas. Now obviously we're not going to be able to have Dirt on the PS4 for Christmas, hence I'm going to make you a villain in this instance, but okay. I'll make you a hero by the fact that you've actually made it happen, and it's happening in April. We're going to do some pantomime heroes and villains from rallying this year. So have you got any pantomime, it's very tongue-in-cheek this, pantomime heroes and villains in rallying?
In terms of, sorry, you might need to explain this to me in a bit more detail. Like, in terms of pantomime characters, or who do I think?
Who's been a good guy and who's been a bad guy? It's very tongue-in-cheek.
Okay, well, a good guy, I think, let me see. Probably bad guy first. I still think that Sebastian Loeb is a villain, because I just wish he was still WRC, giving Sebastian Ogier more of a reason to, like, feel a bit of fear on the stage rather than just going out there and wiping the floor.
Yeah,
I don't know whether he would have been able to do it in the Citroen, and in some ways I'm glad, because it gave Chris the opportunity to drive, but I don't know, I just think it would have been great to see Sebastian Loeb trying to get that 10th WRC championship win, but having to do it against Ogier. So he's my villain, I guess. I don't know how controversial that is.
No, I was just going to say, it's very left field, but it was a strong argument put up. Now, how about good guy?
I think for a good guy, again, tough one. I think probably Chris Meek, because he's just been excellent this year. And You know, he's done absolutely everything he needed to do, I think, this year. Yes, there were a few mistakes here and there, but he's so much more improved over his previous season. And I've only just got back from holiday, so I don't know if anything more has happened with the whole should it be Toyota, should it be Citroen situation. But I think the fact that he's got those options just shows that he's come so far and done so well. And I hope that the decision he makes allows his career to continue properly, because, you know, it would be so unjust if he ended up, you know, losing out and losing the momentum that he's built up over the last couple of seasons. Absolutely. So, yeah, Chris is my hero, I guess.
Very Citroen based, that. It's funny how the whole Citroen thing came back around from what you were saying before. But
yeah,
still,
I'm not bitter.
Listen, Paul, it's been great to have you on, and thank you so much for giving us an update. And let's definitely try and get something going for the release of on the PS4. I'm sure Ryan would love it as well. But I think he and I going head to head. It hasn't happened for a long, long British Rally Championship, probably 2002. And I only had a 1400 Group M Polo, and he had a Super 1600 Puma. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going
to
say.
We need to put you in the kit cars then.
The kit car, you see, I genuinely have a love of kit cars and naturally aspirated front wheel drive kit cars, to the extent where I genuinely will want to make a program. And funny enough, I keep on mentioning this because Craig Breen and I basically had this long conversation on Recce on Wales Rally GB, and we got really, really excited by the concept of doing a programme and bringing all the guys back who were in the F2 cars, who went into the final round, I think it was 95, where one of five drivers could win the BRC that year, and it's when all the factory teams were there. So my passion for the British Rally Championship is not from the halcyon days of Mark II Escort, it's actually from kit car days.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was my kind of era where I was getting excited about rally, so that's why they're in the game. That's why I put them in there. John was pretty integral in making sure that we got them in. It was a shame we could only get the 306 Maxi in the Seat. Obviously, there were some other great cars from that era as well, but we've got the fact that we've got the proper engine recording for that 306 Maxi just makes it incredible.
Yeah.
Screamers, absolute screamers. So
absolutely. Well, let's do something. I feel a kit car battle in the first quarter of the year coming on. I look forward to it.
Sounds good.
Paul, listen, thank you so much, and congratulations on your success of the game, and long may it continue. And we'll take this opportunity to wish you Merry Christmas.
Thanks very much. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Absolute left of wall and absolute king. Absolute king for 200.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
And that was Paul Coleman from Codemasters. Again, I think you can probably sense that I have a genuine excitement for this new game coming out on the console. I would love to have the space and everything else to have the PC. And I've been watching these wonderful videos of all these different people. Obviously, leagues being set up and everything else. It just looks mega. It just looks so, so good. And, you know, maybe one day, if I'm allowed the room, I'll have a little space in the house somewhere and I will get one of these mega PCs. But if the game is going to be as good as what Paul's just been telling us on the console version, perhaps if we do a little bit of investment in a little steering wheel, perhaps a set of pedals as well. And bless him, since Paul did this little piece with us, he's been tweeting Ryan and myself with regards to options for steering wheels. So he knows we're serious. And we'll get a little bit of a comp going on. And maybe we could do something with Absolute Rally as well. Obviously, you guys who listen to the programme, Rally fans, I bet you're quite a few of you are gamers as well, so we could perhaps set something up for that. But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to that once Ryan and I bed ourselves in, do a little bit of testing, get our settings and everything else, and we'll come back to it anyway. But our next guest, our final guest, I suppose, for this season is a man who's, his brother's certainly been a friend of the show. David Higgins, obviously American champion, big brother Mark, who's also a former British Rally champion, I'm sure you know that, still competes out in China, still does a lot of tuition and testing and things like that, and a bit of a stalwart when it comes to rallying, certainly, especially around the British Rally Championship. And knows those events inside out and back to front. And I urge you to search this out, by the way. There's a very, very lovely bit of in-car. Obviously, the Higgins is from the Isle of Man, and there's a lovely piece of in-car where he actually, rather than listen to the pace notes, and this is competitive, he actually drives the stage and tells you exactly what he's doing and what the car's doing and everything else. A little Honda Civic, little high revving thing, and fair play to him for being able to do that. But as I say, he's still involved in rallying, he's still doing quite a bit of rallying, but these days he's also the man that drives the Aston Martin for James Bond. He makes James Bond look good. So while he's enjoying the fruits of being James Bond's double, we thought we'd catch him and we'd have a little bit of a catch him. And also, as a former British Rally Champion and a man that built his career around the British Rally Championship, we thought it'd be a really good idea as well to get his thoughts on what's going to be coming up for the new British Rally Championship in 2016.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be in our final show, a bit of a festive period, but the big announcement over the last couple of weeks, obviously over here in the UK, has been some of these things that are going on with the British Rally Championship. And we thought, who better to get back into a bit of a legend of the British Rally Championship? Mark Higgins, welcome to Absolute Rally, Mark.
Yeah, well, welcome. Thanks for the call.
Ryan being Ryan, we were just talking off air as we were kind of getting ready, and we thought, well, what should we ask Mark about? And we thought we'd ask you about rallying, which is quite important. But we thought we'd take you back. We thought we'd regress to your very first BRC Championship win.
Wow, that's a long time ago now, isn't it? In fact, it's what, 22 years?
Yeah, just make us all feel old, why
yeah,
don't you?
That's what I do that for you, Ryan.
But it was just a fantastic year, wasn't it? I mean, wasn't it a five-way battle going into the Manx?
It was five or six of us could have actually won going into the last round. It would be one of those seasons. I mean, at the time, I think we had six manufacturers with two drivers in each team, all sort of capable of winning the rallies and the championship. And ironically, when I look back now, at the time, we all spoke about it and said, oh, wouldn't it be great if it's like the old days when Vatanen was doing it in the Escort? But we now look back at that period as being, I think, some of the best times of the BRC, really. It was an amazing year and a great championship.
Now, you won the championship in the Nissan Sunny that year, but I seem to remember about two stages from the end, coming down the Curras, seeing a big groove in the middle of the road, looking like somebody only had three wheels on the car. Now, was that something to do with you?
Unfortunately, I can't deny that one because it's all on video, isn't it? Yeah, it was. I mean, there's quite a story to that because we were having obviously, it was the Manx rally, and I think at the time I was that interested in trying to win the event. And two stages, or two before that particular stage, so four from the end, a drive shaft broke. We were leading the rally by about 30 seconds from Martin Rowe and just kicked, maintaining that lead all the way through the day, and we dropped a minute, so that was it, really all doom and gloom. But we went into Mackles, which was a very short stage. It was about I think it was about 4 miles long, you'll probably know as well as I do, Ryan, and I managed to take I think 10 or 12 off Martin. So the next stage after that was the Currits, but we'd actually damaged the top mount going into that and didn't have time to change it. And we had a discussion with my boss, which was Dave Whittick at the time, and if we did win the rally, Nissan could also win the Manufacturers' Championship. But obviously it was a big risk to the drivers. But I wanted to win the rally anyway, so we sort of went for it and ended up coming out on three wheels, yeah.
But importantly, you got the car fixed and you took the title. And like you said, the Formula 2 period was a great era for the British Rally Championship, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a big change. I mean, just briefly coming back, we only just got back to service actually with that and had to overtake a car as we were overtaking a police car at the same time, who eventually followed us into the service area. By the time they got there, the Nissan mechanics had put the wheel back on, so we got away with it. But yeah, no, the F2 was great. it was a gamble at the time, but because you have the manufacturer interest, it made it work. And I think, unfortunately, that's the thing that's missing at the moment. We've just got to get the manufacturers back in some form to give, you know, some of these young drivers a bit of a chance, really.
Now, we'll talk about modern-day BRC in a minute, but for you, you sort of moved with the championship, and your next title was then in a four-wheel drive World Rally Car in the Focus. So the championship had changed, the cars had changed, but that must have been a fantastic car to drive on the British Championship at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dream, wasn't it? You look at all the... to have the same car that was actually being used in the WRC at the time, and they were... it was an awesome car to drive. Like all these things, you take it for granted at the time, and then you look back when it's not there, and you realise how lucky you were to be in these cars. But the BRC, it was good. It wasn't... we didn't have a massive fight that year, but it was just great to be on the classic events, which the BRC's always had, in a proper bit of kit. And we were lucky enough to get that drive. That came about for a bit of a trial event with Stobarts, who got involved, I think in 2004, the end of it. We did three rallies for them and then got the deal to do the following championship the next year.
And you had a great relationship with Stobarts. I mean, you did some world championship stuff for the Focus as well, and then that moved into the Group N program.
Yeah, and Group N, again, it was a big decision for the BRC to make. It was a massive gamble for them. And I think it's always been hard for the BRC, but it seemed to work as well. I mean, we had some great fights with a guy called Ryan Champion. No, it's you, Ryan, isn't it? Yeah, in a Mitsubishi. So, yeah, Mitsubishi were our main competition through the years when we were in the Subaru. And yourself, Guy, you know, and there was a few other boys that we had some really good battles with.
Yeah, and some fantastic battles, as you said. I mean, I remember the Pirelli Rally we all probably still talk about, when David came back and Johnny and Martin and Tapio and everybody was there. There was certainly some good battles in that Group N Championship, wasn't there?
Yeah, and I think it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you've got good depth of field and you're all in similar machinery. And that's where F2s worked, and that's where the Group N cars did work. The only shame about Group N is they don't sort of capture the imagination of the spectator the same. They're quiet. But as you know, driving the cars, you've got to drive them flat out. And from a driver's point of view, you still get a good buzz when you're having a good battle and you're fighting for tenths rather than, you know, tens of seconds.
And as you said, there was probably always a lot more going on inside the car than there was on the outside with a Group N car.
Definitely, yeah.
But so coming back to BRC then, it's gone through a tough period, as we know. It tried to go two-wheel drive again, but didn't have the manufacturer input, so that didn't really work. We've seen a year out. Have you been following the rebirth of BRC, and how do you think it's going to go in 2016?
Well, I'm quite excited about it all. I think, you know, if you can get some good cars and good drivers out there, the whole championship looks good. The events are great. There's never been any doubt to the events. You know, I feel for Mark Taylor a little bit. He had a tough time over the last few years. And I think in reality, giving the championship a bit of a break has got people a bit more excited about the whole thing. So I'm really hopeful it's going to fire back in and get a bit more excitement about it. And as I say, get some support from the manufacturers a little bit. Even if it's just basic support, at least it gets interest there. But if you get 10 or 20 proper R5 cars all out there, I think it could be good. And, you know, it needs a few events for people to get the confidence back in the championship. And hopefully that comes, then it could be great for the, you know, the next few years.
And whilst the manufacturers aren't there, I don't know if you've seen this announcement today about the junior prize, but the fantastic DMAC award of a subsidised drive in the Drive DMAC Fiesta Trophy in WRC. So it's an incredible prize for the juniors to go for, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, DMAC have been great to support the young drivers in the WRC and now, you know, the BRC, which was always a stepping stone for the WRC. It's the only gravel championship that you can actually do proper recces for as well. So, no, that's really good news, and that's got to bring on some, hopefully, new talent, because there are some opportunities around with these prizes now if you can get on that ladder, which is good. And, you know, it's nice to see plenty of manufacturers in the World Championship at the moment, which can potentially take young drivers on if they see the talent.
Now, as well as BRC, you were lucky enough to have a really wide career, really. You've driven in Asia-Pacific, in China a lot, which you continue to do, in America, as well as the WRC stuff. You've driven a lot of cars in that time as well. What stands out in your career for you? What's your favourite memories to this point?
Oh, difficult to say, really. I think I really enjoyed the year in the WRC car in Ireland in the Pirelli car. That battle we had with Loeb, I think to be 45 seconds up on Loeb at the end of the first day on tarmac was pretty cool. I should have retired and gone to the pub at that point. I could have talked about that for a while, couldn't I? That was a mega year. I've just been very, very lucky, Brian, to be involved in some great cars and great teams and still managing to keep away from a real job.
Well, speaking of real jobs, I mean, you're not doing so much in terms of rallying, although you're still very much active in China, but you're now doing a lot of stunt work. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came about.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that started about 7 years ago with Quantum of Solace. They wanted a rally driver, really, for the scene coming down the quarry on the opening car chase and got involved with that. We then went on to do Skyfall. Unfortunately, not as a baddie as I was in the first one, I ended up being Naomi Harris. Not a good look, I can assure you. So Miss Money Penny, and then I've been upgraded on the last one to Daniel as 007 driving the Aston. So we've done quite a few films over the last few years, which I've really enjoyed. It's been a great thing for us career-wise. And but the passion's still definitely in the rallying. And I think I still at the moment prefer 3-2-1 to hear in action.
Now, as we just touched on, as well as doing the Bond films and the other film work, you are still rallying. You've been competing in China. How's that been going for you this year?
I really enjoy China. I've been out there now for 5 or 6 years in total. And it's a bit like the old DRC at the moment. We've got Alistair McRae out there. There's myself. There's Niall McShay, Manfred Stoll, and Chris Atkinson. So there's five of us have a really good battle at the front. The cars are getting very close to like a WRC spec. In fact, the car that Chris has is the Golf, which is based around a Mini built by ProDrive. We have an open class car, which is 35mm restrictor. It's a Subaru, based on a Group NR4, but with a bit more grunt. So the cars are really good fun, and we've had a great few seasons out there, and it's good to be with guys you know. And the events are very different. This year, for example, we had mixed surface, we had tarmac, we had gravel, we had concrete, and the last round of the championship is on an ice lake. So, you know, it's a good variety and definitely keeps you on your toes if something ever come about for the BRC.
Oh.
That was a big if.
You got me all excited there, Mark.
I've been quite excited about it. I would love to do it. If you know, the chance was about, it would be great to come back and have another go at that again.
You see, you're a man who's always managed to pull a deal off. So I can't believe that you haven't got an iron in the fire already.
I've been talking, but it's a lot harder to get deals now than what it used to be. I would like to do it. It just depends on what goes on with the year. We've got a very busy year scheduled. We're back out in China again. And the big problem we have with China is actually getting them to pin down the dates of the events. We'll see. I'd like to try and work on something if there was an opportunity. Yeah, it would be good.
I don't think the Junior is an option for you, Mark. Sorry to break it to you, but I don't think that's going to be an option for you, mate. Even for me and Ryan, it's a long shot now, so.
Yeah.
But can I ask your opinion with regards to, obviously, WRC's going to China next year. Obviously, you've been out there for the last 5 or 6 years. It's a while since the WRC's been there, and I was involved with it from a business side of it, and it's the last time it was there. And, you know, it, even just looking at pictures now, it's just night and day from where it was when the last time it was there.
Yeah.
How do you think it's going to be perceived having WRC out there?
I think they've got a lot of work to do yet. I'm not sure they're jumping the gun getting there too soon. The events are working very well in our championship now. They're very organised. We have the same organisers, we have the same marshals, we have the same course cards, everything on every rally. But the rallies to date have been quite small. It's often a lot of, you'll for example do 2 or 3 stages twice on the day one, then you reverse on the second day. So it's quite an easy, compact sort of route to organise. Change and going to a WRC event is going to be a big thing for them. It'll be interesting. I do hope it works, but there's a lot of work to be done to get it a big success for the first year. But there are roads available, the nature of the events, there are hotels about, that's all changed, the food's better now. So it'll be good to have it there, and I think if it's in the right area, which is not far from Beijing, which has been a good tarmac rally to date, it could actually work okay.
Interesting. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to completely left field these ones, but the mega moment you had on the Manx.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm sure you're sick of talking about, but my other half is a massive TT fan, so we've been over, she's been dragging me over for the last couple of years, and she's never really been interested in kind of the rally elements of it until I showed her that.
Right.
So you got a convert just purely from that moment where you nearly lost your life. I just thought I'd let you know that anyway.
Yeah, no, obviously I see it on YouTube, it reminds me of that.
You know, genuinely, you're a very, you know, fantastic driver and everything else. Just what kind of happened at that moment?
Well, it definitely is the biggest moment of my life. I think collectively now it's had 5 million views on YouTube.
Wow.
We were talking about it today, funny enough. And we'd done the whole thing. We had 3 attempts at the course. The first run down, I took the bottom of Bray Hill flat on the very first run, and I had a bit of a bum bum, and it was fine. But when we put the passenger in for the second run, I tried to do the same, and when the extra weight, the back left wheel compressed into the wheel arch, and when we think it just locked for a split second, and put us into that moment really. And the rest is obviously a lot of work with my hands, a bit of luck on my side, because at 155 miles an hour, the airflow over the car is nothing like what you're used to controlling when you go sideways. So it was throwing my hands at the wheel as quickly as I can, and hopefully she can come back. And I knew if it wasn't coming back after the first one, it probably wasn't going to come back, but it did. And we... We got away with it, but then the worst thing about that, we had another 36 miles to think about what just happened.
But what I also love is the passenger. Was he an American journalist?
He was told, whatever you do, don't look at Mark, don't talk to him, keep your hands on your legs, look forward. Well, he took it properly, literally. I wouldn't want to play poker with him. But when he did get out of the car eventually, we didn't actually see him for 2 days. So I think he hit home when he got back.
Really? Because I was just about to say, because he almost like he didn't flinch. And I thought, fair play to him.
I think he'd been watching my rallying before and thought he's sideways quite a lot. So this is going to happen on every corner.
Now, the other favourite thing I've got, and again, it probably hasn't quite as many views, but I do still love that journey that you did over the stage where you took out the in-car footage of you actually driving the stage, but with no pace notes. Yeah, I think it was in the Honda Civic.
The Honda Civic back in 1994 on Droodale. Yeah, that was quite funny at the time. And what's ironic about that, I've just bought that car back. I've got the very car, so it's in the process of being restored back, and the reason I bought it, my brother drove it and also my father drove it on the Manx rally, so it's got a bit of history to it. That was good. I mean, I've been watching Dick Johnson do it on Bathurst for many years and thought, let's have a go at that, and then nearly went off on the first corner. Yeah, it's had a few hits, that one as well.
Yeah, but let's face it, you had Cliffy sat with you anyway, so I mean, he wasn't that much help, was he?
Well, no, and in fact, I went quicker without Cliffy down the stage with no notes than what I did with him, and he knows that.
Mark, we do appreciate your time. I know Ryan's got a couple of other things that I'm sure that he wants to get off his chest before we let you go. I can tell. Do you know what I've been doing these programs with him for about 6 months now, and I can just tell by the intake of breath that he's ready to go. So he's there, so go on, Ryan. Sorry, mate.
I wasn't really going to come back with too much more. What I was just going to add was, you know, we talked about your immense career. One thing I didn't mention earlier on was you actually had a go at the Roger Albert Clark, and you managed to win that one as well, which was quite left field. That must have been good fun.
Yeah, that was mega fun. And I think of all the things I do now, jumping into the historic cars now and again is great. I mean, you've done a lot of the historic cars yourself, and there's nothing like a good rear-wheel drive, front-engine car, and that Mark 1 was brilliant. I did really enjoy that, actually. The one memory, or a few memories of that, is actually being at the end of Kielder, and then just watching the other cars come through with the lights on and hearing the engines of the BD was amazing, really. And no, it was a really fun event, and to be back on the maps again was a challenge. And no, I enjoyed that. But it's very sad that the rally wasn't actually on this year again, which, you know, hopefully that can come back again next year.
Yeah, definitely. We hope to see that event back because it's you know, a real great addition to the calendar. Well, I'll just finish off with one question then. Out of all the cars you've driven, all the stages you've driven, you can pick any car on any stage, what would it be?
I think a stage. Of all, even New Zealand and all that, there's nothing quite like going down through Baldwin on the Manx. I've always loved that stage.
In the dark, in the dark.
In the dark, yeah. Well, that was before I needed glasses and could see properly. yeah, Baldwin is pretty special, I think. And I think car, it's got to be probably the 05 Focus when we did tarmac testing with it. I never actually got to drive it on a proper tarmac event, but that was an awesome car. I mean, you go from there to sort of back to even, you know, a nice Mark II Escort on gravel, but the technology and everything in those World Rally cars is pretty awesome. So it'd have to be a World Rally car, I think, the last of the Focuses.
Wow. Well, we hope to see you next year. I know Ryan's looking for a teammate.
You can co-drive. I heard he was a bit of co-driving now.
Yeah, well, he was meant to be co-driving quite a bit on the Safari, but every time I've seen pictures, he seems to have driving gloves on, so take from that what you will.
You never take a driver out of a driver.
Absolutely. Listen, Mark, we wish you all the very best for Christmas and New Year, and genuinely, it'd be lovely to see you back, as I think you'd be a very, very good marker for some of those young boys.
Yeah, well, these young boys are getting quite quick now, so you never can underestimate them. It would just be nice to be out there and doing the classic stage. And I think maybe next year is a bit short option or notice for us, but we'll try, and if anything does come up, I'd even do a couple of rallies would be really, really nice. And now the Manx is back in, it would be nice to go back over there, because I think it's been, well, a good 5 years since I've done the Manx rally, so that would be a welcomed addition to my
program. Can you still remember where the stage is good, do you think?
Sort of, but not as well. I definitely need my pace notes back.
Listen, Mark, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, best wishes for Christmas for everybody, and a safe and happy new year.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot. Thank you so much. Cheers, Mark.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
And that was Mark Higgins. And I've wanted to get Mark on for ages, and to be fair, I could have done probably a whole programme, and I keep on talking about this, on that first BRC win of his, that era. I still believe there's a programme to be made just on that alone, but still, there you go. Anyway, Ryan Champion, that's the end of our second season of Absolute Rally.
Well, it's been action-packed, hasn't it? There's always been lots going on, lots of great guests. I think we've had some good stories out of it, and we'll try and continue with that in season three.
I think so. Because fair play, I suppose we should chart the history, I suppose. We started the year as Total Rally. Ryan parachuted in for one programme only. He's been with me ever since, even when he's been in Africa, fair play. So I thank you for that, RC. I thank you for that. Then we went through our name change, and I think it's fair to say our listenership has continued to increase, and we try to engage you guys as much as possible. And really, really do appreciate it. I've noticed the download figures. The download figures for the last three or four episodes have been the best for this year. So I think that speaks volumes within itself. But yeah, it's been an emotional roller coaster. It's been very, very difficult, but it's also been a great amount of fun. And you guys getting involved with us on Twitter and things like that between the programmes really does make a difference, doesn't it, mate?
It does, yeah. But it's great to engage with everybody. It's great to know that people are listening, that we're not talking to ourselves. And, you know, it's great when we stir up a little bit of debate as well. And we've seen that over a couple of recent shows as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, so this is where we sign off. This is the end of season two of Absolute Rally. My name's been Tony Simpson. He has been
Ryan Champion.
And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We will be back mid-January, and we'll be doing some different bits and pieces as ever. We're always trying to work on some things, and we will be looking at possibly going back to live, but I'm not going to promise to you. I'm not going to promise you, but you never know. You never know. We are in talks, but we will be at Autosport. Are you going to be at Autosport, right?
I'm not. I'll be in Sweden at that point, so I'll be on a frozen lake somewhere in the middle of Sweden.
Well, I'll be wandering around on my little recorder and grabbing people randomly as I go about my other business anyway. But there you go. Anyway, listen, I know we'll speak before then, but all the best for Christmas, mate.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to everybody listening.
And again, wherever you're listening to us, whether you're in the gym, whether you're in the car, whether you're running, whether you're on the bus, whether you're in work and you should be working, thank you for downloading us and stay in contact with us. You know where we live, absolute_rally. Good night. God bless. See you soon, right?
Thank you. Goodbye.